Joseph.
The Center Steer Podcast, a Land Rover podcast by Land Rover owners. Welcome to the 21st edition of the Center Steer Podcast. It is December 21st, 2014, and it is our 21st episode of the podcast, so kind of fitting on this date. We're a few days before Christmas, hoping this gets posted before Christmas. I will work on that. So hopefully you're listening before the holidays. Merry Christmas, happy Hanukkah, happy Kwanzaa, whatever you hope to celebrate no matter where
Festivus
you are.
Festivus for the rest of us.
And happy Festivus. I like that. we have a number of people joining us for the podcast, including a special guest. But with me is Harold.
Yo.
Dave.
Hello.
On Skype is Morgan.
Hey.
And our special guest is Matt from the United Kingdom near Birmingham.
Hi.
Matt is Matt. You are with Land Rovers Live, which is on Nixi.tv.
That'll be Nixi.tv.
Nixi. That's the
/ Land Rovers Live.
Perfect. So, tell us a little bit about Land Rovers Live.
So, well, what we really do is kind of what you've had in like Rovers North magazine or LRO, LRM, wherever in the world you get your Land Rovers magazines from. And we've just gone a little bit further and brought it to life in a bi-weekly video magazine covering all things Land Rover.
It is. I think it's very cool. I've watched almost all the episodes. Unlike you, I've not gone back and listened to everything you've done. You've listened to everything we've done, which I appreciate. But your Christmas gift guide, by the way, was really fun. You did a nice job with that.
Ah, thank you. It's the best one I think we've done yet.
It was. It was tongue-in-cheek, but it was informative and fun at the same time.
So it's sort of like what we do, only with moving pictures.
Yes. Yes.
I couldn't tell you how cold it was during the filming of that as well. It was freezing.
It was a nice episode. Yeah, I will certainly have a link to your website and also to the YouTube channel. You can subscribe to his YouTube channel. He's also out on Facebook, right? There's a face. You have a Facebook. I think I like that Facebook page.
And yeah,
I know you're on Twitter also.
We're on just about everywhere now. We're Pinterest, Twitter, Google+, Facebook. Vimeo, Daily Motion, and that'll do for now.
What is Daily Motion? Never heard of that. Is that a UK thing?
Oh, no. Something that John hasn't heard of on the internet. Oh, no.
I think Daily Motion was for quite a while the second biggest video site, probably now third or fourth.
Oh, interesting. Now, is this your exclusive job, or do you have an outside interest or an outside job, and this is your interest?
Yeah, well, this is my interest, and it does take up most of my time now. It didn't, and it was never supposed to, but it does now. But I make the similar sort of thing, but for many other different things during the day. So we make films, TV ads, music videos, and all sorts of things. But Land Rover's been my passion. That's what the show's about.
So what do you drive?
I currently drive... Well, I've got two Defender 90 TDI 200s. One of them's about to go to get something else. So, well, another 110 TDI 200. That's you'll notice the 200 theme running through all of my vehicles.
Yeah, that causes much drooling on this side of the pond, by the way.
It does. It really does.
Good.
Was one of those the one I recently saw a picture on Twitter that you had one towed?
Sadly, that is the case. It's still in the shop being repaired. It's absolutely down to my own fault. One of the 90s has the timing belt ripped out of it and timing gears put in. I don't know if you would have come across the timing
gears. That's the Zeus conversion.
You've got it. That's it. So I never have to worry about the timing belt. Sadly, the other one, which I should have worried about, I didn't, and the timing belt went. And so that's bent all the push rods, and that's in the garage being mended.
Well, the plus side is it only bends push rods and snaps rocker arms. It doesn't break pistons and bend connecting rods.
Absolutely. It's not an issue I've come across before, but actually I was relieved to find that it wasn't too damaging and too expensive at the end of it. Had that have been a Volkswagen or a traditional car, that might have been an engine in the bin.
Right, that's actually an engineered weak link. They're meant to do that.
Oh, good. That makes me feel loads better that he's meant to do that.
Are you going to just repairing the engine, or are you putting a different one in?
No, we're just repairing the engine. It would have been, probably is repaired already, actually. It really didn't take long.
No, it's a pretty quick fix. As long as you don't damage the head and don't have to pull the head off, just swapping push rods and a timing belt takes an afternoon.
Mm.
Is this? Have you always been a Land Rover guy? How did you become a Land Rover person?
I was brought up on a farm and around farming, and you know, over here that's your staple vehicle on a farm would be a Defender. And my memories from being in a Defender as a child, my mum drove one and my dad drove one, and my dad switched over to Discoveries when they first came out. But the noise of the
new series truck.
Yeah, the TDI 200, which would be the first noise that I really remember sitting in the back as a child. And I would, of course, we had the side-facing seats and you didn't have to wear seatbelts back then. But I would jam my legs between the two wheel arches and try and stand up for as long as possible. And that really kind of, I didn't know it got me hooked at the time, but when I later had my own children, that was one of the very first things I really wanted to be able to do for them, was to give them that experience and bugger all the EU laws.
Is that your daughter in one of the videos, the first Land Rover Live user?
That's right, yeah. That's my daughter, Floss.
Nice. Yeah, she does a nice job. You have to check out that video of her. She's playing with a model Land Rover and talking about it. It's
oh,
cute.
I saw that one, yeah.
Yeah, that's really cute. That's just well done. It was nice. Yeah. Nice job, nice job.
Yeah, we haven't had many other entries for that yet, though.
So. Well, you know. So tell us more about Land Rover Live. How'd you get started? And I have some follow-up questions then after that.
Yeah, well, there are many different reasons we got started. I mean, the main one is that in the UK in particular, there are two magazines that service Land Rover enthusiasts. And that'd be Land Rover Monthly and Land Rover Owner International. And they both do a great job. They've been around for a long time. I work in what is effectively marketing, making films and adverts for people. And it just occurred to me that the people who were selling products weren't getting very much out of advertising. But moreover, as a purchaser of stuff, let's say I have the problem like now, my timing belt's gone. I've never had the information of whether to go for a genuine, whether to buy Bearmac, Britpart, Allmakes, or anybody else who makes the different parts. They all advertise in these magazines, but there's never really been buying information about that. So the key thing was just out of sheer frustration, really, that when I go to the store, I know I'm being sold whatever they've got on the shelves, and I wanted to be able to re-empower Land Rover enthusiasts to say, you know, you can make a choice about this. If you don't want a Britpart product, or if you do want an Allmakes product, or you prefer a Bearmac, then you're equipped to know why and make those choices. And I think the same thing runs through many different areas of Land Rover. There are, you know, tens of thousands of us who love Land Rovers. But the information out there for us to make decisions, whether it be in the UK, which green lanes we can do and can't do, what products we can buy and can't buy, it's just not there. So really, that's what Land Rover's Life was about, was I thought if I created a bit of a platform, Kevin Costner style, if you build it, they will come, then people would get involved and chime in with good bits of information. And so far, they have. And that's really, if we can become a resource where people can just say, you know what, Land Rover's Live said that was okay, so it must be okay.
Sort of a consumer reports for Landy enthusiasts.
Yeah, I guess so, yeah, but that's it. And obviously at the same time it had its perks, because it meant I could get involved in more clubs and go, you know, I'd never done any green laning before Land Rover's Live. I've really got into it now. I mean, do you guys have green lanes over there? I don't know.
They aren't always green, but yes, we do that sort of thing, definitely.
It's not an official thing here to have green lanes. That's not part of our laws.
Right. Okay.
Actually, here in Vermont, we sort of do. We have some unmaintained public roads, which are still rights of travel. So,
well, mind you, the state of Vermont is pretty much one big green lane, I think.
That's true.
Yes, yeah. Definitely.
And we do envy you that, Morgan.
Yes.
Yes, they should put that on a license plate. It's the Green Lane State.
What is the? Isn't the Green Mountain State?
Yeah, but they should just make it the Green Lane State.
Yeah. So yeah. Pennsylvania, though, it's all private land for the most part, and it's you kind of.
Well, there are some pay parks.
There are pay parks. That's kind of a staple around here. There's a couple in Pennsylvania.
There are a couple small ones, and there's some probably the largest one east of the Mississippi.
Which one's that?
Which would be Roush Creek Off-Road Vehicle Park.
Right,
Roush Creek, yeah. Which is 25,000 plus acres.
Wow.
In a lot of parts of the country, there's logging roads and fire roads, which are just glorified trails.
Yeah. But they're not – those could easily be changed. I mean, they're at the whim of the, you know, whoever's logging or cutting into there. So, I mean, they could change the – plow it themselves and change
right.
it. But, yeah, it's not official. Put up gates. Yeah, that's happened a number of times.
Yeah, and really that's the same as what's happening in the UK. You know, green lanes are under fire a lot. You know, it's not beyond the it's not out of the all probability that we might lose all of our green lanes in the future. There's a couple of companies who do quite a bit in the UK to try and keep them open, but they're constantly under fire from environmentalists, and it's an easy political point to win over here to say 4x4s are just tearing up the whole place and ruining it for my dog and ramblers and such. So, you know, being able to go and visit these green lanes and show that, and also just promote good, responsible use of Land Rovers on green lanes, I think that's kind of an important thing to do. So we try and cover a bit of that as well.
There's a movement over here called Tread Lightly that does a similar yeah. thing. It promotes responsible off-roading, and really that's actually, in a sense, good for the environment because it gets people out and gets them exposed to the environment and makes them more interested in preserving it.
You're absolutely right. And Tread Lightly exist in the UK as well, along with a company called Glass. And they both perform a similar kind of function, though Glass is a bit more political. They take people to court and all the rest of it. But Tread Lightly and Glass work together and organise groups of Land Rover owners and enthusiasts to go down and actually maintain and repair these lanes, maybe cut them back, fix up where they've got really bad. And that's a great thing. And for most people, you know, in the UK, you're never a two-hour drive from anywhere. So there's always somebody who's going to be fairly local who could chip in and help out on a Saturday or Sunday morning to repair these lanes and keep them open for everybody.
So are you the only one in Land Rover Live, or do you have other folks that help you out?
Yeah, there's a few of us now. There's Amy, who would be the female voice you hear on the show every now and then. She's popped up in front of the camera a few times. She's our assistant producer, Ben.
She was on the Birmingham Land Rover Club group run, right?
That's right, the cake run. Yeah, yep, she was on that.
You forgot that word, John.
Yeah, I know. I'm not a
John
cake.
Is anti-cakeist.
I'm an anti-cakeist. I'm a pieist.
Right.
And by the way, I have to tell you that, you know, our local Land Rover Club is the Fort Pitt Land Rover Group, and I always hated the word group in a part of our name until I found out that Birmingham was the Birmingham Land Rover Group. So I'm okay with group now.
It's still a club, but we call it a group.
So she helps you out. Anybody else?
Yeah, we have Ben as well, who is executive producer on the show. He does I don't know what he does. He does the website and many other bits and pieces, a bit of research, and we have contributors who come in and out of the show.
Is that the gentleman we saw in the first couple episodes?
No, that was Jeremy. So okay. Jeremy was on board with us for quite a while, and now he's moved on to better things, so that's good for him.
That happens. What was the favorite thing you've done so far on the In your what are we calling it, a podcast? Is it a video cast? Is it a TV show? What are you calling it?
You know what we argue about this every week. It's I think it's an online magazine, show. Ben disagrees with me and says it's a TV show. So it's a bunch of videos that fill the space and cover most of the content the magazines do.
How about video log? Video log sounds good.
That'll do.
Yes.
Don't you hate labels?
Yeah. It helps people to understand what you're doing,
and it boxes you into a corner.
Not necessarily.
Don't classify me, man.
Yeah. Well,
I despise labels with a passion. In case you can't tell,
but you need to. But you still need that 30-second elevator speech where you got to explain to people what is it you do. What's the center steer podcast? And people, I don't know what it is.
I can give you a 30-second elevator speech on what I do without using any labels to define myself. Certainly not some big word that starts with an M.
There's nothing wrong with being a mechanic. Apparently there is. So do you have a favorite spot in Land Rover Live that you've done so far?
That's a really good question. I mean, there are so many things I've enjoyed. The loads of things have been eye-opening for me. In episode one, we went to see the RNLI which is equivalent to Coast Guard for you guys.
That was a good one. That was really cool.
Yeah, and that was really great because we got the opportunity to see some vehicles which were even more badass than the Land Rovers, equally as agricultural. But that was fantastic and a real good insight into what they do because that's a completely voluntary service.
They need a fleet of stalwarts is what they need.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. But then I guess my favorite one was fairly recent where we went to a small sort of boutique cider house where they made apple cider. And
that was
fantastic.
You'll be sending samples over shortly, right?
Well, you see, the thing is with that, the best stuff never made it into the show. And that was largely down to trying to preserve it's sort of difficult how to know how to put that. But the guy who made the cider, we think towards the end of it that he probably consumed too much of his own product and was making... was making some amazing comments, and we go through when we interview people, we ask people, you know, more or less the same questions. They may differ, but we always want to know how people got into Land Rovers. You've just asked me the question; we ask it to lots of other people. And his answer for that, which we never put into the show, was that if we had nuclear fallout, his vehicles would still be going. And I thought, okay, fine, I can live with that. But he had a V8 series out the back. So, well, the V8 that runs off gas, maybe not that one. He says, well, hang on. So he took me out there, and he'd built a Faraday cage underneath the bonnet with all spare electrical components in there for the components that would be taken out by a nuclear blast. And
he can brew his own fuel for it, too.
Exactly, yeah, and kill himself off if need be.
Wow.
But that was fantastic. And I think throughout the show it's been, you know, just a privilege to meet all these people who are doing interesting things. I think the most common thing we get asked all the time is, you know, how do you keep coming up with new content for something that largely hasn't changed for the last 60 years? And
yeah, I'd like to know that too.
Yeah. but really it's down to things like Center Steer podcast. You know, it's not so much the vehicles. We could talk over the finer points of timing belts for hours on end, but it is what we do with the vehicles that really makes it interesting. And hopefully, you know, we'll get to see plenty more of those on Land Rovers Live and hear more from this podcast.
So what's coming up on for Land Rover Live? Do you have anything planned for the next couple months?
Yeah, we've got a few interesting things coming up. We were very fortunate to take out the 2015 Range Rover Evoque autobiography, which was a little bit of a departure from what we normally do. You know, we normally focus around LR123, Freelanders, Defenders and such.
The ones your listeners can afford.
Yeah, exactly. But we took out the Evoque just to really see what that was all about. So we had that for a week or so.
Because they let you.
Yeah, absolutely.
If they let us, we'd do it too.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah. Well, we scratched it up pretty good, taking it down some lanes. But
we call that Pennsylvania pinstriping.
Yeah, exactly. But it was really interesting because it really gave me a proper perspective on where Land Rover are these days and quite, you know, what they haven't lost in the new vehicles. So that's a really interesting thing we've got coming up. We're also following around and building more of a portfolio of people who are doing more interesting things. We recently featured a guy called Sean Conway, who had swum from Land's End to John O'Groats, which is the entire length of the British Isles via sea. He's off up to the Arctic Circle soon to do a triathlon there. So we're catching up with what he's done to prep for that. But our big thing this year, as well as sort of refining the format of the show, is to get back out into meeting people physically as opposed to the virtual way that we do it normally. And we've got some really exciting things coming up in the shows throughout the UK and Europe this year.
Good. Well, if you get to the North America and you get to this area, you're certainly welcome to join us and see what we do. You know, that's an open invitation.
That's a great cross-promoting opportunity. We could record his show and ours right here.
And now the news. Thanks very much, Matt, for joining us. You're certainly welcome to stay and join us as part of the panel. Hopefully you'll do that.
Indeed.
Wonderful, wonderful. And so first up, what we'll talk about is we haven't talked about numbers in a while for sales in North America.
Perhaps there's a good reason why we haven't.
There is, actually, because sales for Land Rover and Jaguar JLR were down in November. Land Rover was down 20%. They sold 1,000 less vehicles in North America. It might just be the U.S. I need to look at the article a little closer. But they sold 1,000 less vehicles year to year. So in November of 2013, they sold 4,600 vehicles. And this year, they sold 3,600 vehicles. No idea why. Jaguar sold slightly. They were down 13%. They went from 1,446 to 1,253, excuse me, vehicles. So sales are down. I don't think that's necessarily a problem. It probably just means they're in mid change of their vehicles. And
Often at model year change, there's some things that happen, but it's really only a problem when it continues.
Correct. And with fuel prices here in the United States, if you're a listener not in the United States, you're probably unaware that fuel prices have dropped quickly. I mean, I've never seen them drop this fast in my lifetime. They've gone from, here in Pennsylvania, we were paying close to $4 a gallon for regular gasoline. $3.50 for gasoline. Now it's down almost down to $2.25 in Pennsylvania. For regular gasoline,
I saw yesterday in Springfield, Missouri, it is $1.95 for regular gasoline.
And that's I think the average is about $2. Pennsylvania is slightly higher because of our fuel taxes. But the point is, it's dropped precipitously, very very quickly. And I think that will then, of course, people go, I can go buy an SUV now because even though the miles per gallon are crappy.
This is the cycle of life in the U.S.
You guys are making me sick.
Matt, it's not going to last. I don't see this lasting as all. To get slightly political, I think this is simply a temporary solution to get rid of ISIS. Once ISIS is gone, I think gas prices will go back up. Moving on in the news, the Discovery Sport is coming. I think the official announcement is coming in, I think, January 22nd, 2015, for Europe/the UK. I think North America is not until another month later. I know our guest from last month, Jeff Aronson, has been invited to Iceland for what I believe to be the North American debut of the vehicle. But they've already had an Iceland event for what I think to be, it's not quite clear to me, but it seems to be the European reveal. And so they had invited a bunch of journalists out to Iceland, and they took the vehicle through its paces. There's a number of articles of which we will have links to on the in our show notes on the webpage. And I know in particular the Irish News was in the vehicle behind the Discovery Sport that got stuck in the snow. So it was kind of a big thing. They had vehicles in line, really, 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 really bad snowstorm from what I can understand. I mean, it was one of those that beats you in the face with ice pellets. It was pretty bad. And so the Discovery Sport in front of them got stuck, and there's a chain of vehicles behind them, and then they sent in a proper disco to unstuck the Discovery Sport. The proper disco got stuck. They had to send in a snowplow to pull those guys out, and they left all the vehicles on the side of the road till the next day they could get them out. But that's, it happens. Even Land Rovers get stuck in really, really bad conditions. They're not.
Now, were they all the Discovery Sports?
No. They were all Discovery Sports. They were announced that they were debuting.
Okay.
They sent in a proper Disco LR4, Disco
right,
4
right,
LR4.
Right, right. But the ones on the side of the road that got stuck, were they all Discovery Sports or were there miscellaneous makes?
No, they were all Discovery Sports and the Disco. The recovery Disco got stuck.
Right.
So in trying to get the Disco Sport out. But continuing with the reviews of that, actually Car Magazine out of the UK had a nice review. Bottom line, they liked it. They thought it acquitted itself pretty well. They have of course, a link to the full article. They thought the exterior styling was kind of bland, which I kind of agree with. It's kind of eh. But they thought it acquitted itself pretty well, did a nice job doing its job, which is off-road. Interesting thing I read in this was that they're going to come out with a two-wheel drive version, which goes along with the Evoque having a two-wheel drive edition. I don't know if that'll make it to North America.
And the Freelander.
The Freelander never had two-wheel.
In England they did.
Did they?
I believe they did.
I don't recall that ever
happened. Of course, the Jeep did too. So, I mean, there's heritage there.
There is that. Always good to have heritage. Matt, do you know that? Was there a two-wheel drive Freelander? I'm putting you on the spot.
I didn't know that. No,
I was led to believe it was for
two-wheel drive Freelanders that had been modified, but I've never seen a Freelander that actually is two-wheel drive. But that, you know, it wouldn't surprise me nowadays.
I was led to believe that in the early days of the Freelander, that was available. It wasn't a standard thing, but it was available. I could be wrong, but I thought I read that somewhere.
I've never seen one. But that's not to say I'm right.
Well, so, I might not know what I'm talking about either. So
the Disco Sport, the one they had a diesel engine. They're going to come out with a new diesel engine later in the year.
That we won't get.
Yeah, I know. And then we're going to come out with that new, I think, is Jaguar Land Rover going together on a new diesel engine? That's what I'm kind of picking up. They're coming out with this new JLR diesel engine.
It wouldn't surprise me, and it would make a lot of sense if they would do that. Not that they would ever consider putting it in a Jag for the North America, but...
Well, recently the Queen opened the new plant, which is not too far from where we're based, again, about 20 miles away, developing that opens the new Ingenium engine plant, which is their new very fancy engine, which will be shared, I think, firstly going into the Jaguar XE and then into the Evoque, and we'll see from there. But it, on initial looks, that looks quite exciting.
It does. And, of course, Jaguar is supposed to have looks like they are going to have their own SUV now, which I'm not in support of. But
I'm not a fan of the idea.
Let me guess, it's built on the platform of the Discovery Sport.
I think it will.
Yeah, it's another Freelander.
Which is based on the Freelander.
It's a Freelander with a better grade of leather and wood.
Just what the world needs.
Hey, the world... Let's stop here for a moment. There's nothing wrong with the Freelander, the mighty Freelander. Don't be attacking the Freelander. I had to stop the podcast just for that.
They're spectacular in the...
They are mighty.
They are mighty in the mall parking lots of America.
I have to say that'll be one.
They're quite
useful. John did take his far further than anyone else has ever seen.
And the Freelander is quite useful for introducing lots of girls into the Land Rover sport worldwide.
And why did I get into Land Rovers? I had to pick up chicks. And you can see it worked.
Well, that's not exactly where I was going with that, John, but okay.
So the new Disco Sport is coming. It's going to have, at least in Europe, it's going to have a new diesel engine eventually in the end of the year. It's out there. It's out and about. If anybody gets one, we certainly want to know about it. And if you know, we're happy to take it on the trail and test it out. Anybody going to get one?
Well, we could try to get one over here to test out the new pedestrian airbags.
Tell us more about the pedestrian airbags, a European requirement, if I'm not mistaken.
It is. I think it's the first Land Rover to have pedestrian airbags, which, I have no complaints about that. Although it would be nice if that could get us around the restrictions that are causing the demise of the Defender.
I don't think that's the only reason causing the demise of the Defender, but I think that's one of them.
It's one of them.
I mean, really, on the Defender point, I still think how you build it is a lot that goes into it that they haven't talked about. Having seen them built.
Oh, they're very, very costly to build, and they can't make the price point and compete in the market is really the bottom line.
Yeah, I think it's, yeah.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah. So the European requirements are forcing a way of designing the vehicle so that a pedestrian, if they do happen to get hit by the vehicle, they are going to survive better than they currently do. And I think one of the things that Land Rover has done is to place an airbag into the front of the vehicle. I think it's around the windscreen. Is that correct, Morgan? I think you were researching.
I actually haven't watched the video yet. But from what I read, it deploys down over the hood. So I believe it is mounted by the windscreen.
And so, yes, so if you do get hit by a Disco Sport, if you're out on the highway and you're a pedestrian, your chances of survival have now increased.
Right until I back right back over you.
if we just have inflatable roads, then we'll be away.
Yeah, exactly. Although on that point, the Land Rover, the Disco gets excellent safety marks too. In general, its overall safety is gets a great rating. It is a top safety rating for the Disco Sport, and this is an article that is from.
Let's see. One I'm looking at is from LiverpoolEcho.co.uk.
That's correct. Yeah, Liverpool Echo. Apparently, the Europe NCAP provides motoring consumers with an independent assessment of safety performance, and they give it high marks. There's another article which I don't have in front of me that also gave it another some other high marks. So that's good thing. You know, if you're in an accident,
I've always thought the Disco was a pretty safe vehicle to be in if you're going to hit something.
Yeah.
Now it's even safer for what you hit.
I just emailed you a John, a video possibly of my run at Rovers on the Rocks where I took on a concrete almost wall with my front bumper and my Disco, and it did quite well.
Well, you should qualify that. That's not exactly a stock front bumper.
Yeah, Harold, for those of you listening, Harold built both my front and rear bumpers with an eye toward them possibly being the only thing that survives.
Well, I know how Dave drives.
Yes, so do I.
Hey, I know how you drive too, which is why your truck is built the way it is.
I think all trucks should be built that way.
Well, it's about meeting the needs of the customer.
Sometimes you try to put into reverse going up a hill and you miss. Put into first and you miss and you go into reverse. It happens.
Well, to you it does.
Mm-hmm. So that's the Disco Sport news. If anybody gets one, we want to hear about it, and we'll hopefully have Jeff Aronson on. After he goes to Iceland, and he can talk about his experience. I actually posted to him on Facebook. I said maybe we can get him to do it right. He can Skype in for us right from the driver's seat while he's driving one.
Can we call him our special correspondent now?
Sure, he's our special correspondent. I think that's not a bad thing. Next up, France says diesel cars are a mistake. And they're going to do what they can to get rid of diesel vehicles because they put out too much CO2. I think it's CO2. And they're going to increase the taxes on diesel engines to get rid of them.
Well, so I read through the article, and I have to wonder, and maybe you guys know a lot more about this. Are there restrictions on the low sulfur diesel, what they are here in the U.S. now?
I think they're headed that way, but I don't think they're quite the same as far as the fuel itself.
You're not forcing them to start using additives and things like that.
Well, that was the problem. American standards for diesels were higher than the Europeans, and that's one of the reasons why they couldn't bring diesels into the United States was because our standards were higher.
Higher meaning tighter?
Tighter, yes. Yeah. And so that's why you're now seeing European standards have increased to the point where it now makes sense that it's easy to import the vehicle into North America because the standards are all close to being harmonized.
Okay.
So I think for us, what Europe is doing is helpful to us because then there's a better chance of us getting your diesel vehicles, which you've seen with especially Volkswagen bringing more and more in. Dodge has introduced some. Jeep has a couple now, and that they're bringing in.
Well, Jeep has it because they now have access to Fiat and their diesel production.
Right, and but that goes to the harmonization of the diesel standards. It's easier to bring those in without having to do any major retooling.
Correct.
So, there's been little, of course, there's been discussion. You hear little hints and allegations that, will Land Rover do it? Will Mercedes do it? Actually, BMW is doing it too, because BMW is bringing in a diesel. I think it's in their 6 series. So, but to your point, Dave, their standards have increased. France is apparently, even though they've increased, they still think it's not good, and they're going to raise the taxes to get rid of them. So, I'm not sure what that means for us necessarily.
Well, the irony is that back in the 70s, one of the few diesel vehicles you could get was a Peugeot. I think they in fact imported more diesels to the U.S. than anybody else did.
Yeah, and I think that this trend actually, it's not a new trend. I mean, France are talking about putting more tax on diesels, but the tax on diesels has been climbing for quite some time anyway. And in the U.K., there are areas of the country that you can't drive a Defender into without paying a huge premium. So, for example, today, if I was to drive down to central London or or anywhere inside, you know, 40 miles from London, it'll cost me £100, about $160, $180 a day to do that in low emission zone charging. So, you know, this isn't a new thing. And if France do it, you can, you know, you can bet your bottom dollar that that'll spread throughout Europe and become an EU law, which will then apply to all countries.
You think maybe that has something to do with tax revenue? Because I know that's over here. That's kind of the issue behind a lot of the reason why diesel costs so much more than gasoline is the taxes that are put on the fuel. They've decreased the taxes on gasoline a lot of places, or at least the federal excise tax has been reduced on gasoline, and the federal excise tax on diesel has gone up, and that's a lot of why it costs so much more for the diesel versus gasoline. It keeps most of the rank and file tax consumers who vote, who drive gasoline, keeps them happy because their fuel is cheap.
Yeah, I think that's exactly it, except for most voters in the UK, we drive diesel cars, so I'm not sure the rationale, but the
That's the part that's confusing me. I would think it'd be the other way around. I think they'd want to tax gasoline more over there.
Well, that's actually is happening. I remember when Steve, who couldn't join us for the podcast today, he told me when we were in the UK that there are more that the tax, you know, back in the, I guess, 80s or 90s, they started to increase the tax on gasoline so people would drive more diesels. And now that they're driving more diesels, at least in the UK, they've now increased the tax on diesels to push people to gasoline. And the, you know, cause, and it seems like they're, you know, kind of changing policy as they go for whatever reason.
That's kind of a sneaky way to increase the tax on everybody, isn't it?
Whether it's sneaky or not, it's just it's the direction that they're going. You know, I mean, the taxes for us, they pay for, supposed to pay for road improvements. You know, where's that money going? And that hasn't happened. And that's where our gasoline tax money is supposed to go to, is towards road improvements and road works. But
I think the road in front of my congressman's house is pretty nice.
That it may or may not be, but Pennsylvania in particular is horrible when it comes to road maintenance. I mean, not everybody knows that, and it's something that actually should be talked about. And you know, 60 Minutes here in the United States did a big thing on infrastructure improvements, and Pennsylvania ranks one of the worst when it comes to bridge repair and you know how many bridges, especially in southwestern Pennsylvania, we have. And we actually have one bridge in Pittsburgh where they build a bridge underneath of it to catch falling debris.
Right. It's a catch bridge.
It is a catch bridge. And that's all it does. It's supposed to catch the falling concrete because the bridge is about almost 100 years old.
And it probably costs more than just fixing the bridge in the first place.
Yeah, that's exactly it. And actually, a year from now, this time a year from now, that's the Greenfield Bridge, I think.
Yes.
Greenfield Bridge. And they are going to repair that bridge. It's planned. And if this all goes to plan, they're going to implode that bridge, drop it onto the road below that's about 200 feet, isn't it? That's a fairly high bridge.
Yeah, it's a high bridge.
They're going to bring in a bunch of dirt and sand, put it over the Parkway East right outside the Squirrel Hill Tunnel, if you look it up on the internets. And they're going to, they're supposed to, you know, implode the bridge, drop it down, close the parkway for 2 weeks, bring in the dirt, drop the bridge, and then clear all the debris out and then reopen the road. And that's supposed to be a year from now, Christmas time next year. Hopefully, we'll
that sounds
that
like a very American solution.
We do like to blow things up.
Yes, 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 yes. Well,
you can also, you know, do what we did and just, you know, let everything languish until you have a 100-year flood that wipes out every bridge in the state and then rebuild from scratch.
Well, you'd need a life-ending extinction-level flood to do that here.
Well, and it's also easy to do when you only have three bridges in an entire state. So,
yeah,
hey, now there might have been five.
Important to note that in the city of Pittsburgh, there are more bridges than there are in Venice, Italy.
That's correct.
Wow.
Pittsburgh is the city of bridges.
And potholes.
That concludes the news for the 21st episode of the Sinister Podcast. It is now time for the holiday edition of the M-Word. And now the M-Word, the night before the podcast.
It was the night before the podcast, and all through my brain, not a thought was stirring, not even a grain. 5 minutes they give me to speak my mind, if only a good topic I could find. Just 5 minutes is all I need to share a thought, to plant a seed. Oh, how easy this all must look, if only they knew how much time it took. Seriously, I have no clue. I'm drawing blanks here. What will I do? Often an event happens which draws my ire, and the words flow freely, like gas to a fire. At other times, I'm creatively blocked, and I must struggle to get words unlocked. I really enjoy technical history, a chance to learn and unravel the mystery. The twists and turns attract me like glue. There's much more to the story than just what, when, and who. So many facts my research will find. It's easy to get sidetracked and fall behind. A couple of good ones have been long in the making. They're worth doing well, so much time they'll be taking. Research, research, research it well, to get the best story that I can tell. Edit, edit, and edit some more. Making 5 minutes is such a chore. Reread and rehearse much as I can afford, so I can do a good job when I record. Relax, relax, this one's in the can, but soon it'll be time to do it again. I wish I knew if people liked what I wrote. Perhaps our listeners could send me a note. 'Tis the day of the podcast, and this M-word is done. The words have come like the rising sun. We've reached the end. Another month, another year. Come back next time. I'll still be here.
Welcome back to the 21st edition of the Semester Podcast. It is still the 21st of December 2014, and which is summer solstice is today. Is that not correct? Yep. Winter solstice is today. Is
the
that
darkest correct? Day of the year.
That's correct. From now on, daylight will now increase. Not the day, daylight will increase. I hate that. So when people say, oh, the day's going to get longer. No, it's not. Day's the same.
OCD. Depending on how you define the word day.
First up, we're going to talk about events, and there was Land Rover recreated the Great Divide Colorado Highway run from 25 years ago, and they did it in a modern Range Rover, and Four Wheeler Magazine did the run. And bottom line, they thought that the Range Rover acquitted itself very nicely, and they were pleased. They said that if you've got the ducats and you're in the market for something like that, a luxury vehicle, rest assured the Range Rover has the off-road prowess to match its luxury. And we'll have a link to the article if you want to read all the details. But the modern Range Rover, they thought that it's did as good a job.
Now, is that an ordinary Range Rover?
That was my understanding. It was an ordinary Range Rover, just off the lot.
So Land Rover has not seen the opportunity here to produce a reboot, if you will, of the Great Divide Edition.
Oh, no. I think they did a reboot, but I think it was a standard one. They just slapped a sticker on the side. That's the impression I got.
Well, okay. Yeah. It's not too much different than the original. But
I mean, it still costs upwards of $100,000 American.
Yeah, I mean, the original edition was really kind of a glorified trim package anyway, so I guess that's, yeah, all right.
It's the same thing.
Yeah, all right.
Yeah,
and they restored one of the originals and took it with them, at least for a portion. I think they did it for the whole thing.
I think you're correct. I didn't find that article to pull that up, but I remember seeing that pass by my stream. Yeah, that was
The one that they did, I think, was actually a support truck the original time around, if I remember correctly.
Yep.
Of course, and the downside to the Great Divide Edition is it's only available in white.
Land Rovers in white are spectacular. That is like the color.
Some of us.
This from a guy who thinks the Freelander is the best.
Nothing more needs to be said.
Yeah, I don't know. I'm not that big of a. I like white vehicles, but nah.
Generally, here in the UK, the white ones are the ones that will never get their tires dirty and are parked double parked outside school gates.
I'm sorry, but if I want to have dreams of driving a postal truck, I'll just drive a postal truck.
I'm still partial to the red of my D1.
I like the Alveston red of my Freelander, but white is it's a nice looking.
Anything but white.
Moving on in the news, or in the events, excuse me, we're not in the news, we're in the events, is the main winter romp is coming up. That is February 14th through the 16th, 2000. Wait a minute. Got to pause. This says 2014. I don't think they have the dates posted for this one.
They don't, but I looked up President's Day weekend, and it seems to be the same dates for 2015. So I don't know if they just
it'll be right President's Day weekend.
Okay, we'll pause and we'll start again.
If you just refer to it as President's Day weekend,
that's exactly what I'm going to
get away with it, no matter what.
So moving on in our events is the main winter romp, which takes place over President's Day weekend. For our non-American listeners, that is in mid-February when we celebrate all of all of our presidents, all 44 of them, in one weekend or one day. So that's usually around mid-February, I think, what, the 15th, 16th, somewhere in there. And the main winter romp is coming up in February. Anybody planning to go?
I had kicked it around. I went last year in the midst of one of the largest snowstorms to blast the East Coast in the past decade.
The polar vortex.
Yes, the polar vortex. It took an 18-hour drive and turned it into a 26-hour drive. Or actually, the Massachusetts Department of Transportation is probably more to blame for that.
They closed the road, didn't they?
Well, they tried. I wasn't stopping.
but, I'm not surprised.
But their idea of plowing is to block the entire road with snow plows.
Well, if Massachusetts is blocking the road, that snow must be pretty bad. Because they know how to handle snow.
No, not really. Because when they plow the entire road, they plow all of the exits shut. And all the idiots in their front-wheel drive cars then can't get on or off.
Wow.
Well, not getting on is not a bad thing.
The ones that are out there can't get off.
Getting them off and out of your way is probably a good thing.
Yeah.
I have seen Pennsylvania, especially on the turnpike, they will take three or four of their big plow trucks and they'll stagger them and then they'll just run them down. They'll close the highway and then they'll run them down the highway and do that staggered plowing.
Flying V, if you will.
Yeah, that's kick-ass to see.
Well, that's basically what these guys did, only it was I-95 around Boston and it was like 12 lanes across in each direction.
So you plan to go this year then?
I may. Okay. I'm not committing to it just yet.
Well, this last year, was that also the voyage where your snorkel iced shut?
Yes, it did. I was asleep in the passenger seat with my wife piloting, stuck behind the plows. And she says to me, "Dave, why did the truck just stop shifting?" And I said, "What are you talking about?" We're in Massachusetts at this point. A long walk home.
With your two kids?
No. Okay. Maine is inhospitable enough weather-wise that I don't want to take my kids out there and get stuck someplace.
So you're behind the plows.
So we're stuck behind the plows. The truck is now incapable of doing more than about 35 miles an hour, which is actually okay because nobody else is moving any faster than that anyway. And we got off and got into a parking lot of some little garage that was closed. And I'm thinking, oh, my God, what's wrong with the transmission? To step back, during my prep work, getting ready for the trip, I had swapped out something, I don't even remember what, that had required me to pull the hose off the transmission cooler.
Right. I think I remember this now.
And while I thought it had clipped back on, as I was driving home from my friend's shop where I was working on it, it popped loose and I ran the transmission out of fluid. Or ran it down so low that it disengaged.
That's effectively out of fluid.
Yeah, I was pretty darn close to out of fluid. So I'm thinking at this point, oh, great, the transmission's just given up.
You've burned it up. In the middle of nowhere.
Well, I was just outside of Boston. But
right,
might as
like
well,
I said.
For me, it might as well have been in the middle of nowhere. Anyway, after about a half hour of poking around at it and realizing that, there's all kinds of transmission fluid in it, and it doesn't smell burned or look bad, I was about to try and run us over to an Advanced Auto Parts. And as I'm putting the hood down on the truck, I look up and I notice that the snorkel is just a solid wall of ice across the opening of the snorkel. I'm thinking, why the hell's that even pointed forward? I chipped it off, turned it around. Truck was great.
Well, the easy fix.
Yeah. I was in a great mood from that point forward the whole trip because the worst had happened.
You've learned the value of three-dimensional thinking right there. You looked up and discovered the problem.
Yes. So.
So that's the main winter romp, and you may go back this year?
I may go back this year. Last year, this was my second trip up there. It was spectacular. It is from Pittsburgh to Maine. I mean, the terrain it's a whole different planet.
Well, you know what part of Maine it is? I've never
Waterville.
Is that like mid-north?
Mid, I believe.
You should go visit Jeff.
Jeff usually comes up.
Yeah, he's off and on. He lives off, you know, an island. I mean,
but he's at the
he's at the Winter Romp every year.
True, true.
As he should be. It's just down the road.
That's right for him, yeah.
In fact, I think that was...
is that when you met him?
The first time that... It was the first time that I met him, and it was the first time that any of us talked to him about being on the podcast.
And you did, yeah. You made sure he knew about the podcast. And,
yes.
And you made the connection for us. Oh, good. Well, thanks.
But, I mean, it was a great trip. It seems to be a great trip every year. The first year that I went, they had, I want to say, 104 trucks.
Well, maybe I should try to take the...
That's a pretty good turnout.
Take the series truck. I got heated seats now.
Yeah. Well, there are some people that actually even camp.
Oh, yeah?
They had close to 3 feet of snow last year.
So where do you stay then? Do you stay in a hotel or a bed and breakfast?
We stay in a hotel just because with the length of the trip back, I'm always concerned that if I camp, I'll be tired when I get in the truck to come home.
And are there trails?
Yes, there are. There are some public lands that are open.
Does this take place like on a farm or private land? Or
the sponsor, Bruce, uses his own property as a staging area, and then the public lands are right up the road where everybody wheels, and they use snowmobile trails.
Nice. You know, Matt, we should get you to come over and bring a camera with you, and you'd have good footage.
Yeah,
it's a blast.
Right.
Maybe he needs an American correspondent, and we can get Dave to take video for you.
There we go.
That'd be great.
It is absolutely a blast. It was rough last year with three feet of snow.
Yeah.
Because a lot of the vehicles just couldn't move. And people rolled out onto the trails in their series trucks and just came to a halt.
Wow.
And then blocked the trail for an hour while putting chains on their trucks.
Ah, so chains, that's not a bad idea. Chains are always a smart move.
Limited slip diffs are a better idea.
Yeah.
There's that common misconception, isn't there, that Land Rovers are good in the snow, and in fact, they're truly terrible.
Oh, no, my D2, it goes.
I have to say they are good in the snow.
They're good in the snow, but they're not infallible.
Yeah.
They are better than most things out there, but that doesn't mean that they're completely unstoppable.
I think the point to make is they are good in the snow, they're not good in ice. Because what happens, I think, is the snow gets compacted and gets made into kind of a glary situation where it becomes icy, and then that's when you have your problem. So snow is fine. It's when it becomes ice.
And right, especially on the icy roads when you come to a stop sign and suddenly it is unstoppable.
Right, absolutely. Or people drive over it enough that they melt it down enough, and then it freezes over again, and yeah, that happens.
Our friends over at Ashcroft can make anything go forward.
Yes. Stopping. Yeah,
Stopping's
another thing. Exactly. They go. It's the stopping that's the problem.
Right. You have the same contact patch as everybody else. So really, the fact that you have four-wheel drive or limited slip, it means nothing.
That's absolutely correct. So the weekend before the Winter Romp, though, is supposed to be the FPLRG Winter Classic. And that's going to be – that's our local group here, the Fort Pitt Land Rover Group, which is the local to Pittsburgh Land Rover Club, and we're hopefully going to go out the weekend before. That's the plan. So if you're in the area and want to join us, let me know.
And hopefully this year we won't see John spend 2 hours going up a hill and destroying a transmission in the process.
That was fun. That was a lot of fun.
Okay. All right.
Well, it was going to go at some point.
Well, yeah. Okay.
We have a good video, and if you want to see a copy of that video, you have to be a member of the club. That's just the way things go.
Which I can take care of at any time.
That's right. Exactly. Yeah, you're our exchequer. Moving on. There's other events coming up, but the one wanted to get people's focus on, because we've not been to this one. We mentioned it briefly in a past podcast. The Mid-Atlantic Overland Festival, not to be confused with the Mid-Atlantic Rally, which is a Land Rover-focused rally in October. This is the Mid-Atlantic Overland Festival taking place in middle of August. And it's going to, and the nice thing about for us, anyways, is it's supposed to take place on a 200-acre working farm located in Pennsylvania, just south of State College, so which is not far from us, a couple hours away. So we're hoping to go ourselves. Maybe we'll do a little video podcast from there,
or a little remote podcast recording.
Yeah,
session.
Absolutely. That'd be cool. And so maybe we're gonna try to go to that. So it looks like an Overland Festival. It's put on by Mountain Overland. I believe they're the sponsors.
Not to be confused with the Overland Expo.
Oh, that's right. The Overland Expo. Yeah, that took place in Virginia this year.
Carolinas.
Yeah,
I was going to say North Carolina.
Right, right. So that's coming up. So if you're in North America around that time, might be an event for you to take a look at. there are other events, and we'll talk about them as they come up. But, you know, in the winter here in North America, events kind of slow down. Matt, anything coming up in the UK in the wintertime? Or events seem to slow down there in the wintertime also.
Yeah, events have slowed down quite a bit. There's an indoor adventure show run by The Telegraph, a big newspaper here. They've got some of the Land Rover Global Ambassadors there doing talks. So I think there's maybe Bear Grylls and Ranulph Fiennes and a couple of the other ones talking about some of their great adventures. That's in London somewhere in early, mid-January.
Oh, cool. Well, and the season kicks off, when spring breaks. So that seems like Land Rover shows in the UK kick up again in around April, May. Is that not mistaken?
That's it. Essentially, when there's nobody to rescue or anything else to do, we start having a party.
It's warm enough to go outside.
You got it.
Do you regularly attend any of those shows? As yourself, not necessarily as part of your video?
Yeah. Last year, we went to all of the shows, and then they ended up being Land Rover's live events that we did. But generally, I try and get to as many as possible because there's so many different shows, and I like the ones that are the smaller shows run by the clubs.
Were you at Peterborough?
We had a very big TV studio at Peterborough. You must have missed us.
I wish I had known beforehand. We could have met up because I was there.
You were too busy watching the bowlers in the drone.
The bowlers and the EMLRA and going through all the used parts, and that was huge. That show was huge. Wow. For us, that's huge. I'm sorry, I missed it.
I mean, I think in 2015 there's the Billing Show. Which, are you guys familiar with the Billing Show?
Yes.
So the Billing Show 25 years ago was the biggest show around, and it's 25th anniversary this year. And I'm reliably informed they're kicking that off in some big style this year, throwing a lot at it. So, but by the amount of visitors, it's bigger than Peterborough Show. In terms of volume, it's probably similar. That's what I'm looking forward to.
When is Billings? That's in July?
Yeah, it's in the middle of the year. So July time, end of July. That's when it is.
I seem to recall that. I have another vacation at that point, so that's why I don't think I went to that one.
It's funny you refer to that as a big show, John, but I think any parking lot in the UK is going to be bigger than any Land Rover show here. So
driving down the road in the UK is a bigger show than here. I mean,
for many reasons, not just Land Rover.
You see them all over the road there. Here,
yeah, I'd have a hard time driving in the UK because I'd want to be looking.
Steve told me you can stop now, John. I'm like, what? He says you're pointing them all out. I'm like, yes, because that's what you do at home. You go look here. Yeah, you don't need to do that in the UK.
As long as you wave.
That's true, yes.
Well, you do have to have your hands on the wheel at some point.
Yes. So in the holiday style, it being the holiday season, and hopefully we get this out before Christmas, and you might have a day or two if you want to order something for the holiday, or maybe after the holiday you want to still buy something for yourself or a Land Rover enthusiast in your life. Something interesting I came across. I heard about – Well, good, because these are children's books. Perfect.
All righty there.
There are three children's books that
are M-word content
that are Land Rover focused, and they are. I saw them at the Heritage Motor Museum in Gaydon, and then which brought my attention to them, and I see them now on Rovers North and Amazon.com. And Rovers North has the set of three books, which are called Landy's New Home, Fender, and Landy. Those are the three names, for $87 and. In hard copy edition, and Amazon, I think they are $50 a book. That's it. That's it. They're $50 a book, so $150 if you want all three from Amazon in the United States.
Better off buying them at Rovers North. Less money. It's all three of them together for the 87, right?
That's correct.
And then reselling them on Amazon.
See, now there you go.
In true Rover fashion. We get nothing. We have no connection except that Jeff's been on the podcast. So don't think we're pushing this because.
And John has a whole tea set worth of mugs here from Rovers North.
All for free. All for free. Yes, I do. Matt tells me they are £6.99 available in the UK.
Now you understand the premium involved in having a Landy on this side of the pond.
Yeah, I do now. Yeah, that's some markup.
Maybe Matt, you can. That might be a little side business for you.
Yeah, yeah. So it's what, they've been smuggled in under bags of cocaine and things into the country.
No, they're actually smuggled in later model Defenders. Actually,
yes, that's how it comes. Yeah, under the seats.
Yeah.
Well, even it's 7 pounds. Double that's roughly $15.
Yeah.
So yeah, you could make a you sell them for $30. You make a pretty penny on that.
Yeah, you could make a slaughter on that.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
All right, let's chat after the show.
All right. Yeah, don't tell Jeff. Don't tell Jeff Aronson. Also,
he's not on this podcast. Screw him.
So following along the lines of gift ideas, I came across something, and I have to thank the 4x4 podcast. It's a podcast I've been listening to for a while. They they're based in North America, and so I've been listening to them on and off different times. And they had a holiday gift-giving guide a couple weeks ago, and I heard about this. Ordered two for myself, and they are killer. I fitted them in my Series truck. Haven't had a chance to drive it with them in, but they are available through Amazon Basics, which is house brand, yes. And they are 12-volt heated seats. You plug them into your what we call the cigarette lighter, your access point and power point, and they slide right over the backs of your Series truck. And you're not really going to put them on the front, the bottom pad of your Series truck, especially if you have a military one, in which case you need to have access to the fuel right underneath the seat. It'd be a little problematic. But they plug in, and as long as you have enough amperage to handle it, you now have heated seats for $30 American. Although
that's $30 per seat, right?
$30 per seat.
Okay.
Although when I went out to pull up the link for the podcast, they are currently unavailable. But I will have a link to them. I'm sure there may be other models out there, and maybe they're just sold out because of the mention from that 4x4 podcast. That they are sold out. But to me, it's like an easy thing. I tested them in my Jetta, which already has heated seats, but just for testing purposes.
Yeah, kind of an anti-climax at that point.
Yeah, it was fine. I mean, it does there's two settings on the controller. Well, three technically. There's high, low, and off. And you plug them into the circuit lighter, put them on high, low, puts out enough heat. And, for Series truck owners, I think this is like a no-brainer to me, especially if you're in a northern climate and you want some heat and you're always having trouble keeping the cabin warm. You can try to help keep your body warm.
Well, the heat in my Series truck has two settings, off and cold.
Mine is on and off, which is the same, really. You're lucky to get any heat coming out of that thing.
And well, these are the things that keep me in a disco.
Well,
you're not ready to step up to a Series truck, Dave. You're just not.
See, when you have a Series truck and you have, especially if a diesel in it, it takes a long time for that diesel to heat up, if ever. And so heated seats.
Yes, it takes from October till July.
So heated seats make it all the much better. You now have instant heat to your body to keep you warm. So I highly recommend. I'll have a link to it on the webpage, on the show notes. Go out and buy yourself heated seats. Every Series truck owner, I think, should have one if you're in the northern climate.
And my recommendation, if you're going to do this, is have your electric system checked out by somebody who knows what they're doing. And whatever you do, don't actually power the cigarette lighter off of anything that came out of solar hall wiring-wise. You want to run a dedicated line to the battery and not run through what they consider a fuse box. Get something that's capable of handling the amperage and do it right.
This may be an opportunity then for those who are trying to power their cell phones or their computers while they're driving their Series truck. And if they want to upgrade their electrics, this might be another good opportunity to do that, because you're going to add, if you want to add the heated seats, make sure you have good amperage, as you said, a good circuit to the battery.
Well, sure. If you're upgrading your system, you may as well consider all of your needs.
So any sense of an idea what it would take, how much to, the standard Series truck, we talk another $100 to upgrade your electrics or,
Well, it depends on
just throwing it out
what your guy charges you hourly rate wise. So if you're doing it yourself, it's probably only $50 or so worth of materials to do a nice job with it.
Good. And then you can
hour or two's time.
Right. What do we call cigarette lighters now? They don't call them cigarette lighters anymore.
I believe they're called power outlets.
Power outlets.
At least that's what I'm going to call them.
I like it. Power outlets.
When I'm not busy calling it a cigarette lighter, whether there's a lighting element in it or not, it's still a cigarette lighter. But.
And Matt, I apologize. I didn't look at amazon.co.uk to see if they're available there, but maybe I'll do that afterwards.
I'll be sure to check.
That might be, that to me is just like a killer thing. That's just like a no-brainer. It would make your life much better in your Series movement. You could even put them in the disco, Dave.
Of course, I already have heated seats there, too.
Not all discos came with heated seats.
technically, maybe not, but they're all there.
Well, if your seats are covered in leather, there is a heater in there.
Yeah.
But the ones that are covered in vinyl, which they actually decontented the D2s in 03 and took away the heaters unless you had the leather seats.
Ah, that was terrible.
Yeah, I know. It's a step backwards. But basically in the D2s especially, and I think most of the production run of the Series 1 discos, if you had leather seats, you had the heater, and all you had to do was add the switch to turn it on.
Yep. All of the on my parts truck, the first thing that came out was the switch panel, and it went to somebody that needed it far more than I did.
Yeah, they're an easy thing to sell if you're parting one out.
Oh, yeah. That and the CDL. And
which, in case our listeners don't know, that's the linkage to operate the locking center differential, which was not available on the Series 2 Discoveries, but was an easy retrofit using Series 1 parts.
Yeah, it was only available
after 04.
On 04, yeah.
From the factory. But prior to that, it was an upgrade that could be done.
And I'll have you know, all Freelanders in North America came with heated seats. It's a matter of whether they're plugged in or not. So those are our holiday gift items.
I'm biting my tongue.
I've said enough about Freelanders today.
Sounds like a plan. I like it. We're going to move on to our special holiday feature. This is the 21st episode. It is December, and it's
December the 21st.
Very close to Christmas and what we call the holidays. So I thought to do something a little different and maybe also learn about people. It's very exciting. And do it could be a short little story about that involves Land Rovers. And I got this idea from Land Rover last month, coming out with a novel that had Land Rover content. So that's my thinking for this, would be some story that is important to you or is interesting to you that has Land Rover content. That doesn't mean you're going down a trail, but some interesting story. So I invite our listeners, if you have a similar story and you want to share it with us, please do. We'll do our best to reshare them as they happen. And I will start off by telling you my story that involves Land Rover content. It's something interesting and that warms my heart, I guess, for the season. And when I remember that involves a Land Rover. So years ago, I have lots of friends in Quebec and went up to Montreal, drove all the way up to Montreal. And I get there, and my friends are already there, and they're already enjoying themselves. Yes, they're drinking, and we did drink then the rest of the afternoon. I got to Montreal probably about 2 in the afternoon. It's like a 12-hour drive from Pittsburgh to Montreal. And I still have this – we had my buddy burn the CD of the music from that day, and I can still remember the music. And he lives in this – row at the time lived in a row house. And we're out on the front deck, and we're watching people go by, and it's June in Montreal, which the weather was fantastic. And we're drinking beers, and we're also drinking mixed drinks, cranberry and vodka, as I recall, and having a great old time. Music's blaring. It's loud, as you can imagine, and you're surprised the neighbors aren't complaining. And having a good old time. Just really just a fun time. I remember those good events with your friends. And the Land Rover content is I got there in my Freelander. So when I think fondly of my Freelander, I think of that event. I think of that music. When I hear that music, I think of that time with my Freelander, and it was a good time. That's my heartwarming story with Land Rover content.
The interesting thing about that is you mentioned the having the CD of the music. I think did I ever give you a copy of the Freelander CD that I have?
The one that came with the vehicle?
Yeah, Land Rover produced a mix CD of music that they actually gave out with Freelanders. It was a Freelander music or something like that, they called it.
You know, you put that in the disco that I bought from you, and then the CD never worked after that.
Well, there you go. It's Freelander.
So what is your heartwarming disco, Land Rover-inspired story?
Well, one thing I always find interesting, and I think Matt hit on it earlier in the show, the question that's always asked is what got you into Land Rovers? And I always thought that was kind of interesting. In the UK, it's usually about, well, my dad had one, and I remember as a kid, or my neighbor had one, or I was in town and a caravan of a bunch of them drove by, and I was impressed by that. Over here, it's more about people seeing TV shows like Born Free or Mutual of Omaha's Wild Kingdom, and having sort of a something from their childhood that's started there. With me, it's far more boring. It was really just a business decision to get into Land Rovers. I was always a British car guy and
Jaguar guy.
And became a Jaguar guy, a Jaguar specialist. And at some point, that was really still a part-time business, a side job for me. But I decided I was going to step it up and go full-time and really go after this business. And I decided at that time it made sense that, you know, you really need to drive the stuff that you deal with. And so it made sense for me to get out of the Japanese station wagon and get into more British stuff. But I still needed something that was all-wheel drive that I could run and get parts in. And Jaguar didn't make trucks, thankfully, even though we've had that discussion. I think it's a wise move for them not to. But their sister division was actually quite good at it. So I decided to get a Land Rover, and that was my first exposure to it. And of course, I liked it, and it was capable. And it was a Discovery that I bought a dozen or more years ago and bought it on eBay and flew to Atlanta, which I later discovered was infested with Series 2 Discoveries. It was a great place to buy them. It was actually a soccer mom's disco. There were plenty of soccer programs in the back seats when I took it apart. But then, of course, you know, the obsession sort of hit me, and I got into doing the series truck, because if you're really going to be serious about Land Rovers, you've got to have a series truck. And at that point, I decided, well, you know, it made sense to sort of get plugged into the community a little bit, if for no other reason than just to get more information and to get exposure to people who have done things that I haven't done yet with them. I'd had pretty good luck with online communities before and with other makes, and so I thought I'd sort of poke around and look to see what was out there Land Rover forum-wise, and happened to be on Yahoo and discovered this Fort Pitt Land Rover group forum that was local to me. And so I thought, well, okay, I'll check these guys out. And lo and behold, one of the guys on there is a guy I'd bought parts from on eBay. And it was the president of the club, the prime minister, we call him. And so I got chatting with him. And then there was this guy named Scooter that got on there. And when I decided to go ahead and stop lurking and introduce myself, he, of course, had to reply back, you know, it's good you're a mechanic. And, well, strike one, Scooter, but that's okay. But, you know, I got involved with these people, and then I found out they had local events. And so I thought I'd kind of, well, okay, maybe that might be all right. They had an event coming up in February of 06. It was one of the guys, John, as a matter of fact, was hosting a bonfire. And, of course, I had no idea who John was, and he's just this guy who says these dumb things on this forum.
All the time.
All right, well, you know, what the heck. I got this Range Rover. I can get out of most any situation. If I don't like it, I'll leave. The deal was he'd had this property and he was going to have this bonfire on
one
it.
One time only, and it was true.
Well, yeah, that part, he said that many times since then. It was not advertised so much as that at the time. But as I recall, the run-up prior to the event and the conversation in preparation was, well, you know, we got people coming who aren't in four-wheel drives. Do we plow? What do we do? And one of our other members suggested, why don't we just show up a couple hours early and just drive up and down the road and pack the snow down? And, well, okay, I could probably do that. So I show up in my P38 with bald street tires, and I'm the first guy there, unfortunately. I just plow right up through 18 inches of snow and get up there, and not a soul around and nothing to do. It's starting to get cold out. The temperature's heading down around 10, and my wife's with me, who's still not totally enthused about it. And
10 Fahrenheit.
Yeah, yeah. Well,
let's go meet a bunch of strangers in the woods.
Yeah.
Yes, yes.
Exactly, pretty much, yeah. And it's
that's
like,
happened
well,
before.
I have to remind her that, you know, we got up here, we can get out, we can leave anytime if this doesn't go well, whatever. But we're kind of bored, looking for something to do, make some heat, so we scrounge a couple shovels out of the farmhouse and just start shoveling the road, what the heck, you know, one of the first people that shows up is this pickup truck, this two-wheel drive pickup truck that kind of comes halfway up the road and conveniently gets stuck in the snow right in front of where we're shoveling. And it turns out it's John's cousin and her boyfriend who'd had a bit to drink. And they get out and you know, well, we're sorry, we got stuck where you're working. It's like, yeah, that's all right. And she says, well, you must know Johnny then. It's like, well, I will when I meet him.
That's right. We hadn't met yet.
We had not met yet. I had no clue what you looked like other than the fact that I knew you drove a Freelander, which soon enough shows up. Some guy in a Freelander comes up the road, sees us working, and decides, screw this, I'm just driving around, and keeps on going. Yeah. Nice to meet you too, sir.
Yes. Well, why stop? I might get stuck.
Well, yeah.
Well, see, there you go. That's a good story. I like that one.
Long, but that's sort of my exposure to not only Land Rovers, but our local club, which I will tell you, if you really want the ownership experience to be maximized, you need to get plugged in with a club.
And I think Harold hit it right on the head. Back in the late 80s, I remember staying up way past my bedtime when I was in late grade school, early high school, watching the Camel Trophy videos. They used to run them on, I want to say it was like ESPN2, although it might have been ESPN all the way back then. And they were just the coolest thing ever. Fast forward to 2010, I've got a wife and two kids, and my wife's idea of a four-wheel drive vehicle is a Toyota RAV4, and the winter that they referred to as Snowmageddon occurred, and the Toyota RAV4 was completely immobilized. Because their idea of four-wheel drive is to just, I don't know. I don't know what they do. It was a piece of crap.
they got their design ideas from the Freelander.
Yeah, it could be.
Front-wheel drive with a little bit of power tapped off for the rear wheels.
A very little bit. So I looked at my wife one day and I said, you know, you want a 7-seat vehicle. I'd rather cut my own cojones off and put them in a jar than actually drive a minivan. And we're not finding anything that we can both agree on that's in our price range. What would you think about getting an old Discovery? And
she says, an old what?
No, she says, I think that'd be cool as hell. And I said, you know, we've been
always
thinking about...
liked her.
Well, I said, we've always thought about, you know, how do we get our kids involved in the outdoors? Because we've got two little girls. I said, you know, if we had two little boys, there'd be scouting and that kind of thing. And I said, you know, it seems like on these Land Rover forums, there's always stuff going on that involves camping and stuff. I said, this seems like a pretty good idea. And
yeah, go camping in the woods with strangers. Yes, that's a good idea.
Well, yeah, I mean, hey, generally speaking, most people have more to be scared of from me than me from them. So we went ahead and drove to New York and bought a Discovery 2 and had it shipped back. And I haven't looked back yet.
So you didn't actually drive it back from New York after buying it?
No, thank God. Because it broke down 20 minutes after they delivered.
You are clearly not cut out to be a series truck owner, Dave.
Yeah, that could be. I don't know. Yeah, I'd do it today. I'd drive it back today. But anyway, so that's how I got it. Every year at Christmas, up until this year, and this year was just a fluke, I have taken my truck out to a tree farm in Butler with my kids, driven through the tree fields, while other people are hiking about, dragging trees back to their car, truck, minivan, whatever. We're out there riding right through them, picking out a Christmas tree. And it is spectacular. And every one of them looks at us and goes, God, I wish I was that guy right about now.
And when you find the perfect tree, do you saw it off neatly or do you just rip it out of the ground with the truck?
I saw it off neatly.
Oh, okay.
That's it. That's how I got into Rovers, and that's why I love them, because I can get my kids out there, and they just permeate my life.
Morgan?
Yeah, so, you know, my history, like Harold said, sort of started with TV movies specifically. You know, grew up watching Born Free and The Gods Must Be Crazy, stuff like that, so... later, when I decided that I wanted to rebuild a vehicle, I had been looking around at a few and decided on a Land Rover. Specifically, really wanted a Dormobile. a series truck. So that's what I started looking around for. And
not picky at all, are you?
I'm very picky. you know, in Vermont, I have a beautiful drive to work. It's really long. It's, you know, about an hour drive each way, about 50 miles or so. And, you know, most of the year I just take the highway, cause it's easy. But I have another route, that goes up over the App Gap, we call it. It's the gap, one of the gaps in the Appalachian Mountains. It's, takes you up. It's not particularly high, that gap. I think it's about 2,400 feet above, sea level, something like that. Absolutely beautiful drive, just S curves all the way up, S curves all the way down. And for years, going up over there, I used to pass this driveway that had a really nice old bicycle hanging in a tree, you know, 25 feet up above the ground, kind of like, you know, an old, a signboard. Just went up and over, always seeing that. And, you know, that was sort of one of the landmarks I would always remembered on there, and always wondered about. And then at one point I had, posted on Craigslist just sort of as a last ditch. Hey, anybody got a series Land Rover that they would be willing to sell in Vermont? And a guy who happened to live on that road by the hanging bicycle, he was like, oh yeah, I just imported three. You want to come look at them? I said, sure. Where's that? He was like, oh, you know, the hanging bicycle. I said, absolutely. It's on my way to work. I'll stop by. He had a couple of Series 2s with Galvi chassis that he had imported. They were immaculate, but outside of my price range. And he had a sort of rough Series 3 that was in decent condition, also had been converted to diesel. So that was a nice bonus for me. Took one test drive in it and was like, I am sold. So came back a little while later and bought it. And, it was a fun ride almost back home.
That's another story, isn't it?
It is another story. I'll just mention briefly that, it did not have enough battery power to start. And, unfortunately did not have enough diesel in the tank to get to the nearest gas station.
Now, this is familiar. This is very familiar.
So, yeah.
I think we need to hold that story for
another
podcast.
Have had the quintessential series truck purchasing experience. And, yeah. Yes, we could do a whole episode on that.
I think we should.
Yes, absolutely.
Is that the one you're restoring right now?
That's the one I'm restoring right now, yeah. It sat just too much. Needed too much work, so I'm rebuilding that now. And, you know, getting into finding the appropriate series parts, I created my own distraction by starting seriespartscom.
Yeah, because I have to ask you a personal question here. Is this the only Land Rover you've ever owned?
It is, yeah. I am a total masochist, if you can't tell.
You're very unique. Because usually people have more than one.
What the hell are you doing on our show?
I don't know.
Well, he's sort of.
And then somehow I met these crazy guys from Pennsylvania.
Hey, whoa, we're not crazy. It's you people from Vermont.
Hey, I'm not crazy. My mother had me tested.
Don't feel bad. I'm crazy.
Someday, and it's a little off topic for what we're talking about here, but we should talk about seriousparts.com. Put that down in the notes. We'll talk about Serious Parts in a future episode.
Sounds
we should
good.
Do that.
Yeah, it's funny because you're so involved with that, it's hard to think of you as being a newbie of sorts by only having one Landy.
Is the hanging bicycle still there?
You know, I haven't been by this season, but I believe it still is.
And we will now go overseas. And we will end with Matt, our special guest. Have I built you up too much?
Well, we may be a little bit disappointed, but my story sort of comes from fairly recently. As I mentioned earlier, I've got two TDI 200 Defenders, both 90s. And whilst that's all well and good when you've only got two children, expanding the family any further requires a slightly different vehicle. So that's the position I'm in. And so one of them, at least one of them, has to go. And in deciding which one I was going to get rid of, I sort of went through the pros and cons of both vehicles. One's tuned up to 150 horsepower, the other one's a standard one. And then I started thinking through the memories that we'd had with each vehicle. And it sort of reminded me in the short amount of time that I'd really had these vehicles of some of the cool stuff that we'd done. And the thing that really stuck out for me was the more recent vehicle that we'd bought, which is a 93 TDI 200 Defender. I bought that one just merely on a whim, because when I got married, the truck I had wasn't quite smart enough to be a bridal vehicle. So I bought one that was even less smart, resprayed it real quick, and that was my wife-to-be's bridal vehicle. That was cool. But then we went off on our honeymoon around in that, and that was all very nice as well. But the main thing that I really sort of cherish about that vehicle is earlier this year in June, we went over to France in the vehicle, and some other Land Rover clubs went there as well, but we just travelled over alone. And it was the 70th anniversary of D-Day Normandy landings, as you're probably aware. So we went round and did the whole Band of Brothers thing, had a look where everybody came on and all the different bits and pieces that happened. And we, being in a Land Rover, it gave us a huge opportunity to go to places where nobody else could go, because in France they all drive ridiculous small cars. So they have to stay on the main roads. And of course, this is President Obama's there, the Prime Minister's there, the world leader's there. So the roads are closed. This wasn't a problem in the Land Rover. You could drive across the cliff tops, and that's exactly what we did. We drove across the tops of the cliffs.
No roads required.
Exactly. And the only other people that were there were the French Mountain Rescue, who also drove Defenders, which was great. So then we just walked down into Arromanche. But the highlight of that trip for me was if you've seen any of the pictures of that vehicle, when I resprayed it, it was supposed to be the Heritage Keswick Green. Well, I'm not a particularly good sprayer, and somehow it ended up turning out matte. So it looked a bit military, and there's Willys Jeeps absolutely everywhere during these DJ celebrations. So when you drive along the coast, nobody's allowed on the beach unless you're in a Willys Jeep or appropriately aged motorcycle. That's all that's allowed there. And at no other time of year is any vehicle allowed on the beach. So we were driving down Omaha, down the promenade at Omaha Beach, and we just waved onto the beach because we're in a four-wheel drive vehicle, which is kind of military coloured. So, you know, that memory of actually probably being the only Land Rover to have ever driven the full length at full pelt down Omaha Beach and back, and having a couple of funny looks from the Willys Jeep owners, but I was going to make the most of that little trip.
You know that Willys Jeeps, Bantam Jeeps, which is the original Jeep, is from north of Pittsburgh.
Oh, right. I didn't know that. No.
Yes, they're from Butler, PA, which is an hour drive from where we live. And there's an annual Jeep festival that now takes place in Butler, PA, which Harold and I went to last year, celebrating the Bantam Jeeps. Bantam Jeeps were the original Jeeps, and they couldn't support the contract. So then the contract got pushed off to Ford and other people to create the Willys Jeep.
Yes, I did know about that, actually. I mean, I know it's sacrilege to say, and I'll probably get hung, but I really would love a Second World War Willys Jeep, or Bantam Jeep, or Ford
Hell
Jeep.
Hell yeah, of course you would. Why not?
Just call it a prehistoric Land Rover and you'll be okay.
It's exactly what it is, yeah.
Mm. So the idea of being the only Land Rover that's probably ever driven the full length of Omaha Beach, that was super exciting for us.
Legally, at least.
That's cool. That's really cool. Thank you for joining us for the holiday edition of the Center Steer Podcast number 21. I hope we all wish you a happy holidays. Hope you have a good time wherever you are, whatever you're doing. And in Land Rover speak, hibernaut. I'll throw out the hashtag hibernaut. That's one of their big things on Twitter, is to, you know, go out and do something. Go out and enjoy yourself, especially even in the wintertime. There's no reason to hibernate and not enjoy your Land Rover. You know, Land Rovers are great in the wintertime. Especially if you get heated seats for your series truck. So if you have anything you wish to contribute to the podcast, you want to give us your story idea on how you connected with Land Rovers, or some story that connects you with a Land Rover, feel free to email us. I go out to our webpage at centersteer.com. That's C-E-N-T-R-E in the British spelling, steer.com. And you can find our email address. You can also reach us on Twitter at Center Steer. We're available also on Facebook. We have a page on Facebook. And feel free to interact with us there. I know Derek does. So, and this is our monthly shout out to Derek. How you doing, Derek? And he'll listen in a few days and comment to us.
We need two people to do that, just so Derek isn't alone. He's being singled out because he's the one who talks to us.
He does. And we have a couple dozen listeners that show me in the statistics. But I think there's a lot more folks that download the podcast from the webpage itself or listen, you know, outside of the standard iTunes subscription. But if you want to go out to iTunes and give us a rating, we'd appreciate that. That shows up too, and that can also push the podcast up and other people can connect with it. Matt is doing Land Rovers Live, which is a really, really good video podcast. Can I say that? Video podcast, Matt?
I'll let it slide once more.
So I recommend you go out and check that out. It's a bi-weekly. Does that make sense? Bi-weekly? It's every other week. It's always a confusing
term.
That is
bi-weekly.
That is bi-weekly. But it can also mean midweek. It's like
that would be semi-weekly.
Is that what that means?
Yes, that's what that means.
So bi is only every other, not bi is not twice.
Bi is every two. Semi is every half.
Oh. Well, see, we've learned something on the Center Steer podcast. Something else.
I reckon one of you's read the website then.
No, I just know the language.
The Queen's language, right?
Well, I know the language. The Queen's variant is, well, that's, I'm still learning that.
That's right. So that is the Center Steer podcast. I want to thank everybody for listening. I want to thank you for contributing in your way that you may have over the past year. I want to thank Harold. I want to thank Dave. I want to thank Morgan from Vermont, and especially thank our special guest this month, Matt, all the way calling in from Peaky Blinders headquarters in Birmingham, England. Peaky Blinders is a good show. Check that out if you haven't done that on Netflix. Really good show. Thanks very much, Matt.
Pleasure.
We'll talk to you next month in January for another edition of the Center Steer podcast.
The Center Steer theme song, Sunset Rider by the Tritons, is available from Nivio's Music Alley. Check it out at music.nivio.com.
See you later.
See you later, Dave. See you, Harold. Bye, Morgan, if you're still there. And yep. Happy holidays to you all.
Happy holidays.
Happy holidays. Take care, guys.
Take care now. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Bye.
See ya.